Today I have with me Dr. Terry Aldred. Would you please be able to introduce yourself and what you do?
Thank you. I'm Terrier, or Deckett, from the Klaseban Nation, which is located just north of Fort St. James. I'm a member of the Lasiliu, the Frog Clan, traditionally known as the Voice of the People. I am a family physician. I wear a few different hats. I'm a clinician with Curious County Family Services. I'm the acting medical director for primary care for FNHA. I work with the Rural Coordination Center at BC, and I'm also the site director for the Indigenous Family Medicine Program.
That's incredible. What inspired you to become a doctor initially?
So I didn't know I was going to go into medicine since the time I was a little kid or anything like that. It was actually during my third year of university. And I was driven by service, service to my community, and becoming the best version of myself as possible. And that was based on traditional teachings from my elders around the pride of one is the pride of all, meaning that it's not just about me. How I conduct myself, what I do, reflects on my family, my community, and my nation. And I grew up both in the inner city, but also in rural, remote, north central BC my entire life. And I've really seen the disparities, and I wanted to help. I initially wanted to go into a number of medical trades, which turned into pharmacy. And while I was defining my scope, I really wanted to build interdisciplinary teams that would bring care out into communities, because that kind of care was not accessible to me when I was growing up or to my community members. And while I was talking to my profs about that, a couple of them, mentioned that maybe it would be easier for me to follow my dreams if I went into medicine, in which I laughed in their face because I said, I don't really know where doctors come from, but I'm not sure they come from where I come from. Mm-hmm. And they essentially convinced me to apply and help me with reference letters and that sort of thing. And I guess looking back, the rest is history.
Yeah, wow. And so in medical school, did you receive any pushback in relation to you being Indigenous and or female? And if so, how did you deal with it?
So both. Some of the common things or comments that people would make, particularly when I first entered medical school, was the assumption that because there is an MD admissions program that were designed to help increase the number of Indigenous physicians, because we're very underrepresented given our population in Canada. But the assumption was that because there was a dedicated admissions process, that we somehow got off easy, or that we had less stringent requirements, which actually wasn't true. We had twice as many interviews and had to submit even more documentation and that sort of thing, as well as all the other requirements of applying to med school. But that was the kind of assumption, that we mm-hmm. didn't deserve to be there as much as our classmates. And there was generally just a lack of understanding. I remember holding a focus group between of Indigenous medical students and then one of non-Indigenous medical students. And the biggest takeaway was that, the Indigenous medical students really just didn't feel understood. And the non-Indigenous medical students really just wanted to understand. They started being able to see that there was a gap in their knowledge around Indigenous health and the history and the current barriers. But they weren't sure what to make of that or how to address it. And then there was soft racism or microaggressions. So people would make comments about me not looking like other girls in my class, and I need to, manage that in my appearance so that people will take me seriously, and I guess from like a gender perspective. And people would also, insinuate in many different ways that I somehow that I exceeded despite the odds, which is a nice thing in some respects. However, it was often done in ways that were like, oh, wow, like, you know, it's so great that you're here. You must be so smart. Your parents must be so proud of you. And so I guess there was just like a patronizing tone to it. And even if it wasn't, it does highlight the fact that there was a general expectation that I was unlikely to succeed, or was more unlikely to succeed than my peer counterparts. So the fact that I was succeeding was surprising. And as I went through clinical and got onto the wards, there I did see evidence of overt racism, where people would ask me to go see my quote-unquote drunk relatives in Emerge. Indigenous patients would be assigned to me, which I honestly preferred, but but just so definitely in lots of different ways and on multiple different levels.
Mm-hmm. And so touching a little bit more on your Indigenous background, in what ways have you found as well that modern Western healthcare, apart from the prejudices, directly negates the traditional medicinal knowledge from your clan?
So in some ways there was like worldview differences, mm-hmm. and that can be seen in patient care, but also in working with Indigenous peers, in that there's a general assumption about my confidence levels being low, when often it's a state of being. We mm-hmm. tend, I don't want to generalize, I'll say I tend to operate from a place of humility, especially in new and novel surroundings. I tend to be more quiet and watchful and kind of learn from observing, as these were traits that were seen as good and were bolstered up as I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that when we are seeing Indigenous patients, you know, oftentimes they may take longer and use more of a story approach. They may be more circular rather than linear, like this started or the symptom started here and this is how it's developed. They may, you know, start with something that happened, you know, when they were a child, or, you know, something that's happening that's stressful in their overall life before kind of honing in on the physical symptom. And so, and then when we're talking about like conceptual frameworks, kind of Western medicine, which is, you know, based on Euro-Christian worldviews and ways of knowing and being, is very focused on the physical aspect of health. But not just the physical, they're actually even more focused on acute management. So if there's a part of your body that's broken or not functioning well, how can we essentially mend it or get it to be more functioning? Kind of like being a mechanic for a car. Indigenous ways of knowing and being is more holistic. So we tend to take into consideration people's emotional being, mental well-being and spiritual well-being, mm-hmm. and at the center of it in my teachings was culture. It's really important to know who you are and where you come from, and not that you may be really involved in cultural practices, but it's really important to be to build that strength within yourself, to be really rooted, because that helps to guide you as you walk in the world, and it also helps you to know what keeps those elements of health healthy and well to you. And so and also in Indigenous ways of knowing and being, healing is always possible even when curing's not. And so there's not always an emphasis on, you know, living longer or curing an illness, but really at bringing about healing. And so it's nuanced, but it's not always the same. It can be. And so I think right now these two systems don't necessarily integrate well, but I think there's so many examples of how that work is starting to happen, and examples of innovative clinics and services that are really doing this very well, and showing that it's incredibly powerful when we walk that two-eyed seeing approach in medicine, as is often said, where, you know, we really lift up, you know, really robust, well-executed Western medicine alongside Indigenous wellness principles and practices that are rooted in culture. And that's going to be different depending on where you are, the nations that are involved. And so I think that it's part of the reason it's not widespread is that you have to kind of look at it as every clinic or every step is going to be a little bit different depending on your current context of how you can really build that work in. And so some quick examples I have of how you can start or to look at blending or incorporating both ways of knowing and being is to spend time with trusted elders and knowledge keepers. You know, if you've never been to a reserve, go to a reserve, introduce yourself to the health center staff or the band staff. You know, go to public cultural events. And try to find ways to build in more time with your patients, especially Indigenous patients or those who may not be able to fit into the classic, you know, 10-minute appointment structure.
Mm-hmm.
And also try to incorporate patients' feedback into their care plans, and look at not just what they can do for their physical health, but look at it more holistically, and other areas that could help them to get to a place where they can really focus on things that that can improve their physical health and well-being. So if they're really struggling with their mental health, you know, seeing if they want to talk to somebody like a traditional practitioner or an elder and incorporate that into their care plan. If that's something that resonates more with them than, say, seeing a traditional psychologist or counselor, you know, look at traditional diets and look at if that kind of a meal plan would work better for the patient than, you know, the kind of standard go-to meal plans,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And so to touch a little bit more on the racism that we've been seeing in healthcare, do you believe that northern and isolated communities are more susceptible to this racism than other regions? And if so, why?
I think the honest answer is we don't know,
okay.
because we haven't ever really collected good baseline data around this. Where data is available is in like census data, which we know is heavily flawed for Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably broader than that, but and then there's like research papers, which are kind of usually like snapshots in time. But from that, we can say that racism is fairly pervasive. One of the issues with northern and remote is that there's less choice.
Mm-hmm.
So there's often one hospital or one clinic or even sometimes just one doctor. And so if there is situations where people have felt unsafe and there becomes a reputation, it's really hard to look at rebuilding that trust and repairing those relationships And so people often tend to start avoiding care altogether. And because there's not a lot of accessible other options, people start presenting later and later in disease processes, which makes it much harder to treat. Some of the other things is because there's less resources in rural remote in general, and when you couple that with systemic racism and bias,
mm-hmm.
when mistakes happen or when we are in places where we're acting out of our biases for a multitude of reasons, then mistakes can be deadlier because there's less of an option for people to have it be picked up by other allied health professionals. So I guess in summary, I think systemic racism and biases is present everywhere. I think because rural remote has unique challenges and increased barriers in general, I think it can heighten that experience. It also makes it so that when people detour, like, so I'm not going to go to community X, but we'll go to community Y, that often means, you know, an extra hour or two commuting on highways like the Highway 16, the Highway of Tears, which has its own risks in winter driving, and that sort of thing. And so I think there's probably other harms or risks that come from people experiencing racism in rural remote areas that is probably not well captured anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very fair. Would you be able to touch briefly on the In Plain Sight report, which was recently released regarding the results of the BC-based investigation in addressing Indigenous-specific racism in healthcare? How did you feel reading the report?
I was heartbroken, but not surprised.
Mm-hmm. That's totally fair. How do you believe that these findings will be perceived by your non-Indigenous colleagues?
That's a hard one. I think there's going to be a wide variety of responses. And as an Indigenous physician, I feel like I walk in both worlds. So I have my perspective as an Indigenous person who grew up in the North, has the experience of growing up in a very remote community. And so I really have lived and understand the disparities and the barriers and have seen how the systems of oppression and the racism that exists, how it does impact my family, my community. And so I really appreciate that this report is shedding light and on people's experiences and sharing these stories, as heartbreaking as they are. And on the other hand, I'm a physician, and, you know, because I grew up hearing about my family's experiences accessing care and my community members, you know, I really assumed that people in medicine were, you know, going to be like not nice, or that they didn't like Indigenous people. And when I got into medicine, what I realized is that, like, it was filled with these amazing, altruistic, kind humans who really wanted to do good work. They really want to help people. And so I understand, or I became aware that there's this huge gap, that there's obviously systems and structures that are causing this divide, because, you know, I understand that physicians and people in the healthcare system, they're doing, they want to do good work. They don't want to cause harm, and they don't want to discriminate against any group of people. And so I think that because physicians, and I can only speak from as a physician, I think that it can be really easy to take these allegations and reports, personally. And if we don't make time and space to work through our reflections and emotions around that, and don't build our shame resilience, then it could be really easy to be dismissive, and not really see it as the call to action that it is.
And oh,
And I
sorry.
think when we look at it through that perspective, it can be really helpful. And so, but it is hard, and I think that we have to do that internal work so that we can really focus on the issues. And that's my hope, is that this report will help to essentially put a lot of momentum behind looking at, okay, let's stop focusing on whether or not we believe racism exists, or whether or not we think that there's racism in our healthcare system. And that just say that, racism and systemic bias exists. How can we build systems and processes to mitigate it and try to address the root cause and treat it so that we can move past this dark part of history?
That I think those in terms of hopes for action would be very beneficial. I believe that's all the time that we have for today, but thank you so much for doing this interview with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.